Welcome to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox, and I'm in Omaha, Nebraska this time, not in my office in Estes Park. I'm at the 31st biannual Pope and Young Convention, Saturday morning before the show starts. We've got a little bit of background noise as people are moving around and moving the silent auction stuff out. I'm sitting at the Stalker booth today with Alan Clark. I met Alan a handful of years ago. We started talking about blacktail hunting. Alan, how are you doing this morning?
Doing great. Doing great. Good to have you.
All right. So are you're from Indiana, is that right?
I am. Southeast Indiana, yes.
Good deal. So right in the heart of whitetail country there, huh?
Yeah, we got some. We got some good ones.
Yeah. So I was kind of surprised years ago. I don't even remember exactly when it was that I first met you and you were expressing some interest in hunting blacktails. And I was thinking to myself, why the heck would somebody want to come from Indiana out to California to hunt blacktails? But as it turns out, there's a little bit more to the story than just, you know, wanting to come hunt blacktails, but there is a destination specific in mind with California. And like I said, there's not a lot of people that are traveling specifically to hunt California, but that was just part of a bigger story.
Yeah, correct. Correct. It wasn't the blacktail per se. It was the opportunity to hunt California. That just happened to be the opportunity that was afforded me.
Yeah. So now you'd hatched this idea, and I don't even know if I was privy to it at the beginning there when I first met you and started talking about blacktails, but you know, we've all heard of the super slam, the sheep slam, the turkey slam, and to a lesser known degree, the deer slam, which is, you know, a pretty neat kind of blue collar, affordable goal for somebody to set. But you came up with an entirely different twist, and one that was the first I'd heard of and still have not met anybody else that is after this one. So tell me what your idea was there.
Well, like you said, the deer slam and the super slam and all that, I never thought I'd ever really have the opportunity to do that. And it really wasn't a real high on my list. But I just started hunting. I just liked to hunt, and I just started going whenever the opportunity would afford me. And after a good amount of years, you know, one day I woke up and said, man, you know, I've been doing this a while, hunted several places, got the opportunity to do a lot. It just dawned on me one day, you know, maybe that's something that I could maybe accomplish just as a regular guy, maybe try to get all 50 states. And I had 25 or so before I ever kind of considered it, but it just kind of a slow process. I just try to knock off one or two here and there, and woke up one day and now I'm, you know, well on my way.
Yeah. So how many states down are you at this point?
I've 141, so uh-huh. I've got 9 more to go. And the good thing is most of them are the easier ones. You know, I've got all the tougher ones to draw. Most of them are all in the Northeast, you know, your Vermont, Delaware, Massachusetts, those ones there. Basically over the tag, the only problem is the access to private ground probably,
right,
to hunt. But
uh-huh.
I've got several leads, and I'm just a matter of getting the time to go.
Yeah. And that's something that's pretty neat, you know, with as being a member of the Pope and Young Club, and you've been a member for a long time and are active in the board.
Correct. Yeah.
As well. So that alone, you know, just networking within the club there gets you a lot of opportunities that might be, you know, a closed door otherwise.
Exactly. That is the reason I joined, was to rub elbows with like-minded. I'm of the age group that I don't do a lot of social media. It's just not my thing. So my networking is walk up to a guy and shake his hand, talk to him face to face. Takes a little bit more time to accomplish that, but that's just the way I have to do it. This club afforded me that opportunity. In one place, you could potentially have hundreds of leads. And so really that's what drove me to join this, was for that. And it's worked out exponentially huge, you know.
No, that's great. I mean, that last night at the Saturday night dinner, there was what, like 1,000 people?
I believe there? So, yes, yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, you're pretty good odds you're going to have somebody from all 50 states there.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the neat thing about the club too. I mean, it's not just a, you know, when you have the banquet, it's not just people within that state or, you know, immediately surrounding states that show up. There's people are really into supporting the clubs and they'll fly. There's guys, you know, a lot of guys from Alaska that came down. I'm sure that there was all 50 states represented. I haven't looked at the map out there. They've got a map. It's pretty cool with, you know, you put your pin in your map from your hometown there and it seems like it's pretty well represented.
Yep. Yep. There's a couple maybe that aren't, but by and large, most of them, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah. So I'm sure that the only thing you need to have a flag, a name on that little flag that's pinned on there. Then you can start taking note of who is where.
And it has a phone number on it.
There you go. Uh-huh. You need to hit up. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. We had Don Trump Jr. as a speaker last night. And I got to say, I was really impressed with not only how articulate he is, the message that he delivered, and it just felt, you know, as your average citizen, it's, you know, you're so far removed from Washington and what goes on there. And it just seems like, you know, the sportsman has very little voice in what happens there, and to see that we have, you know, that kind of representation there in Washington via the president's son was and the stuff that he's done in the Interior Department setting that up in the, you know, the public lands bill that was just passed, and to hear his involvement in that and how passionate he is about the outdoors was really, I mean, it was, I think everybody in the room felt uplifted.
I came away with that feeling of genuine. I thought he was a genuine fellow.
Yeah, exactly. And I hate to say it, but man, I wish he was president instead of his dad.
Well, there were some gigs headed towards that, I think. All right. Who knows? But
yeah, well, that would be great if that would if that would continue to move in that direction. Because, man, you could you talk about an administration that's done a lot for not only for, you know, public land. But for the sportsman, I don't think that there's been as he pointed out, you know, since the Roosevelt administration, there hasn't been this much movement in a positive direction for hunters and fishermen.
Yeah. He did mention that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, it was pretty neat. I mean, I'm not real political and I certainly don't talk about politics on this podcast. It was really heartwarming to hear that last night, and it gave me some hope and enthusiasm for, you know, the future here if we can keep things going in the same direction.
I think that was a genuine feeling most.
Yeah. So you just got, going back to that 50 state, you just got back from Hawaii. That was your most recent state that you hunted, right?
Correct. I did. Yeah.
Good deal. So you hunted Lanai and for axis deer, and for those who aren't aware, axis deer are quite a challenge with any weapon, let alone, you know, a bow and arrow, and even more so with a stick bow. And I can speak to that firsthand. I hunted, I hunted Maui about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, four axis deer, and I didn't hunt. I spent maybe a morning and an evening hunt, I think was about it. But I got enough stalks in and enough futile stalks in to know that, man, those things are wired. Mm-hmm. They are quite an impressive animal to hunt. I mean, beautiful, fantastic eating, and super spooky. And yet you managed to get one.
Well, you know, everybody has their day, and evidently that was mine.
All right.
I found them to be quite the same. I was there for 10 days, and I found them to be very jittery. They would, I'd blown everything I had an opportunity at. I just happened to find myself in the right spot that happened to, several things came together, and I was just happened to be in the right plot.
Yeah.
Worked out.
That's oftentimes what it takes, you know. I mean, it's repeatedly putting yourself out there and not giving up. And mm-hmm. I'm sure with your quest to hunt all these states in as many hunts as you've been on, that it, you found that to be the case, that just it's a matter of repeatedly, you know, getting out there and getting after it and not giving up.
I find that to be true. Usually when you do get the job done, it comes pretty easy. It's the time in between that's the work.
Right.
The hunt, the chase is, I find so.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many instances where it seems like it's going to come together and then some small thing, whether it be within your control that you goofed up or whether it be, you know, everything was falling into place and then something that's totally, you know, came out of left field and was totally out of your control. You know, I had a buddy of mine, we were hunting Nevada one year and it was the last evening of the hunt, like a 10-day hunt. And he had a mule deer just dead to rights bedded down and he was closing in. He was less than 50 yards and a stinking golden eagle dive bombed the buck and blew it out.
How about that? Yeah. There you go.
I mean, it's just one of those things that's like, you know, and the next time it'll be you're totally bumbling everything up and the buck just gets up out of his bed and turns his head the other direction and offers you a shot. And it feels like one of those things you didn't earn. But in that one, you know, that few seconds there, but the whole, you know, season or seasons or years coming up to that, there's all these opportunities that just didn't pan out for one reason or another. And then all of a sudden things fall into your lap.
That's the way it works. If a guy knew when that day was going to be, well, wouldn't that be great?
Right.
You got to keep at it in between to be ready for that day.
Exactly. And there's all those experiences you learn from, you know, coming up to that moment there that, you know, put you in that right situation and also give you the knowledge base to make the right decision there along the way. So,
I agree.
Yeah. Well, what are some of your favorite species or favorite hunts that you've, maybe even more so favorite hunts, because I think that's kind of, you know, you can get individual memories that may not necessarily be your favorite species, but just some standouts.
Well, the species thing hasn't been a real top of the list for me. It just happens to be the adventure that's calling me is where they're at.
Uh-huh.
And I tell everybody I've not yet had the opportunity to hunt goat.
Okay.
But that's the top of my list.
Uh-huh.
Not for the animal itself, but where they're at.
Sure,
The country they're in is what draws me to there. I just want to go there. I want to see if I can do it.
That's something we share in common. Yeah. That's my bucket list animal.
I will go one day.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been hoping for years I'll draw a tag and not have to, you know, fork out and dig into the bank account there to make that happen. But
go to Canada. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. As the older I get, the more it looks like it's, you know, going to be some opening of the wallet to make that happen.
Ah. Keep swinging at it.
Yeah.
That's why I figure sooner or later.
Yeah.
Got to keep that faith.
Yeah. Idaho. I'm starting to build points now in Colorado now that I'm a resident, but I'm still another year before I'm in that, you know, or out of that 3-point pool and into the.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Where I'm actually, you know, it's a viable chance that I'll get drawn.
Yeah. I'm hoping I might, I'd like to get that Colorado one this year. I'm getting close and I apply for the female.
Uh-huh.
I applied for the 16 late one this year.
Yeah.
The first non-resident.
Uh-huh.
You know, I might get snowed out, but I might have the tag in my pocket. You know?
Yeah. 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 Be sitting up there on top of
I could
snow
watch.
To melt.
it's just a gamble, you know, but you got to play the game in order to ever hope.
So. Yeah. No, that's the truth. I mean, it's how many different states do you apply for on average?
Eight or so, something like that, for everything, for goat, maybe three or four. I don't know, Montana, Utah, Idaho, and Colorado. I have some Nevada points, actually, when they let you. I've got five or six of them.
Yeah, I've got 10 that have been sitting on ice for a handful of years.
Yeah, they get like one tag every 10 years or something. So
yeah, well, they had a really good population up until that die-off, that pneumonia outbreak, and that was... Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago now, something like that. They lost their entire, virtually their entire sheep and entire goat population in one winter. And
ouch,
man, oh man, it was, and that's not across the whole state. That was one region, but that was where they had the mountain goats at. And I think they found, from a ram standpoint, I think they found 9 rams that were better than 190. In that pneumonia outbreak, and
man.
Yeah, just unreal. But I would when I was hunting up there, I would see, you know, 30 or 40 mountain goats in a trip, mm-hmm. you know, when I was deer hunting, and they're yeah. always fun to watch, and it's something neat. You just see more wildlife, even if you didn't have a tag in your pocket, just getting to watch them. And those bighorn sheep, you'd see the lambs and ewes and running around and yeah. button heads. And you'd always see, you know, again, the 30 or 40 of those things. And occasionally you'd find a good ram. And yeah, it was pretty neat to watch them. And it sure was sad to see that happen. And I think part of that was they just let that population get too big. And then they also had salt licks up there. And I think, you know, that's when you get one infected animal and they hit that salt lick and they're all hitting those salt licks, then that'll spread it a lot faster. Yeah.
Makes sense.
So it was a pretty sad day, but they're working on rebounding, but it'll take a while, you know, to get to real huntable numbers.
Yeah. So far, that's my goat hunt is there in the Rubies there mm-hmm. in Nevada. I got up in amongst them and just got to be as close as I could get to them without the tag.
Yeah.
But I collected a bunch of hair that had been stuck on the bushes, and I put it in a plastic bag, and I've got that like in my most prominent trophy spot at home.
All right.
So far, that's as good as it's got for me, but that's all right.
Yeah, I've pulled tufts of hair out as well, too, out of the bushes, you know, in the beds. I've watched them, you know, dust bathing and big plumes of dust come up, you know, when they're doing that and stuff. It's pretty neat, so. Yeah, and I hope that's not as close as I ever get to hunting them.
Yeah, that's just so far.
There you go.
That's as close as I got.
Yeah.
Someday.
Yeah, I've got a picture of one stepping up. I was walking down this ridge and came, you know, across some this rocky outcropping, and there was a billy that I jumped up out of his bed at about 10 yards and he got up and, you know, looked at me and stretched. And I mean, he's, you know, 25 yards mm-hmm. from me and that's not something. A care in the world. I mean, it was pretty neat experience. They're such cool animals. And, you know, the year after that winter kill, I took my wife back up in there, and, we saw three goats. There was a nanny and a kid, and we saw them one day, and then the next day they'd gotten separated, and the kid was on the one side of the ridge, and I'd assume that the nanny was probably still in the basin that she was in, but that kid was just bawling, man, like just bleating like crazy, nonstop. It was like a predator call. Mm-hmm. And my wife, she was like almost to tears. This thing was, you know, just crying for its mom. And I actually called the thing in to about 60 yards, you know, just bleating back and forth to it. And it came bouncing up to us and then stood there and, you know, was like looking at us. And it was a pretty neat little bugger. But that a couple days later, we saw a really nice billy. And my experience with those things at that point had always been, you know, that they're relatively approachable. They didn't get much hunting pressure and stuff. And so when I saw this one, it was, I don't know, about 200 yards away. And we had my video camera, and I told my wife, oh, let's sneak up on it. We'll get some cool video. And I didn't make it 10 steps, and that thing had lifted its head from feed and turned, saw us, and just boom, bolted. Ooh. And it was like I was shooting a howitzer at it or something. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe how spooky this thing was.
Wow.
And it's like, well, that's good. You know, it'll maybe that one will make it through and continue to pass along the genes there. So that was a number of years ago. And of course, they had the quota shut down there for residents for a number of years. And I think now that they're up to like six tags or something like that. But it's still not enough to be able to get a non-resident tag. I think that they do 10% to non-residents, so they'll have to get at least 10 tags before we'll get a chance at a crack at it. But
it's all right.
Yeah, you guys just got to be patient.
Somebody will get to go on a good hunt.
Yeah, indeed. So a handful of years ago, you made it back out to California.
I did.
Yep. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that hunt, since that's kind of near and dear to...
So I contacted you a little bit about that. You was gracious enough to give me a little bit of insight, spur me on a little bit. And so we had talked about the weather, you know, and once it got a little moisture or snow melt or whatever, that would be a good time to go. Uh-huh. And we were all kind of sitting around waiting on that. And this year showed up to be a pretty good for that. So we decided to just go. And so me and a buddy of mine went out, and we packed in several different places. Was out there for 2 weeks or over. Got into Got into a lot of bears, not so many deer, but a few.
Did you have a bear tag as well?
Yeah. Okay. My buddy, he ended up getting a pretty nice chocolate bear.
Now, did you see a lot of color phase bears?
Yes.
Or was it,
okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they
That's
were.
That's been my experience as well.
Probably 50-50, something uh-huh. like that. But never saw a soul in there. That year, it seemed like most years from what I've talked to other guys, the fires were all over.
Yeah.
And it was actually, I would have thought that they wouldn't let us in there.
Uh-huh.
It was burning your eyes and really hard to see
wow.
too far. But I stopped by the fire station there on the way in, and they said, nope, you're good shape. If there's a problem, we'll come and get you.
Huh.
I said, all right, then, we'll go. So we got in there, and it really handicapped.
The glass.
Yeah. You had to get over there to see them.
Right.
And then you, through the day, your eyes was really... it would really affect your, they would start burning and just irritable. But it is what it is. And that's when we were there. So we had to make the best of it. So it turned out really good. Let's see, I ended up missing a buck that I finally saw. I come away with, of course I want to go back and give him another go at it, but, I thought they would be a little easier to spot. You know, I had a little trouble seeing them. It was thicker than what I had experienced in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a learning experience.
Sure.
You know, you have to go. And then I have a hard time finding anybody to go. Seems like nobody wants to go on these. That's not a sure thing.
You know, right.
Most guys will, what do you want to go all the way out there for to do that? So I end up going by myself a lot of times. And then when I get home, if I've had any decent luck at all, or at least wasn't terrible,
right.
Well, then everybody wants to go.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like so.
Yep.
I'm waiting on the next good weather pattern or whatever. I'd like to go back out and try her again. In the meantime, I'm trying to knock off some of these other places that's still have left on my list.
There you go. Yep. Yeah. So what's your target for this year? You already got Hawaii under your belt.
Yeah, that was the 41.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to try to do maybe a New York, Massachusetts
okay.
trip. Maybe hit both of them, or a lot of those. If you're close enough, you can hunt both of them in one trip.
Right.
I've got several leads ongoing. It's just a matter of my time.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple other things I'm doing. I'm going back to Alaska this fall. Maybe back out to Montana. So I just try to have to fit it in when I can. But that's my tentative goal.
Yeah. So are you? In order to check a state off your list, is it just necessary in your mind to hunt it or to actually tag something in it?
Yes. I mean, I want to just hunt there.
Mm-hmm.
So that means having a tag in my pocket and going for at least, you know, usually 2 or 3 days.
Sure.
You know, a guy could buy a tag and go for an afternoon and call it. But in my mind, I'd like to at least give it a legitimate chance
at it.
The guy asked me the other day, I never really thought about it, but a guy asked me that the other day about, out of those 41,
uh-huh.
how many have I actually hunted and harvested?
Yep.
And you know, I never really thought about it. I mean I have pretty good luck, but so I sat down and, you know, kind of went through my head, and I've harvested somewhere near 30.
All right.
So somewhere around 10, a third, mm-hmm. that I've actually hunted, but not that maybe I might
go back and revisit.
Maybe
there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that affects a lot of a guy's success normally. Usually it takes multiple trips to a spot to learn it, to get.
Yep.
And
yep.
I find myself usually going once or twice, and then I'm going on trying to do something else.
Sure.
So that kind of affects, you got to kind of get good at recognizing what's going on pretty quickly.
Right.
Either getting your act together or not.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I've done pretty well at that, considering I don't go hunt the same place for 6 or 8 years in a row.
No, I've found, you know, chasing mule deer around, and this is something I'll be talking about in my seminar later this morning, is that my chances of success increase exponentially the more that I get to know, you know, the country.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of mirrors what you just said there.
You really got to leave the house knowing that you better afford yourself that luxury, or you're probably going into it
mm-hmm.
with less of a degree of being able to get one. But
yeah.
You know, it just it kind of goes one against the other. If I spend too many times hunting a certain place. Yeah, I might get better at it, and I might ultimately help myself, but then I'm taking away from...
Yeah, you're not checking any more states off your list.
Guy has only so much time on this earth, and I don't have a lot of time, multiple trips, you know, used to, but so I try to... If I can, I try to lean over and try to. So
So tell me about your involvement in the club there. You're not just a regular member. You actually are more involved from a volunteer standpoint.
Yeah, I've been a member for about 20 years. Started out just trying to do what I could do. You know, they ask for volunteers. I try to do what I'm comfortable doing with so I got to be a regular member, and through the years of meeting these guys, I've got to know most of them. And they've talked me into further volunteering, further, you know,
amazing how that happens. Isn't it?
And so I'm on the conservation committee. I volunteer to, I'm a measure, and I've been a measure for about 10 years. I volunteer to work the panel and the convention years when we bring all the heads in. I help unload them out of the truck, set up the displays, do all that. And when I come, it takes 2 or 3 days prior to, so I'm here for 10 days, a week, 10 days prior, doing this, for everybody to come in and just look at them. And then same thing in reverse when we leave, after everybody's gone, we'll be here another day or two, tearing them down, put them back in the crates, put them on the semi and ship them off.
Yeah.
But somebody's got to do that kind of thing. And that just kind of in my niche, and I don't mind doing what I can. So
it's pretty neat being around. I mean, in the main room there where they do the banquets, all the tables are in the center there, and then ringing around the whole room are all, you know, world records, top 10 animals. I mean, there are some massive animals of all the species in America. And a buddy of mine has his number 3 Roosevelt that he took last year in California here. There's, you know, massive typical and non-typical mule deer and coos deer, blacktail, whitetail, bears. It's a pretty impressive space to be in.
5 new world records this time.
Wow, so, man.
It's a pretty good mount.
Yeah, no kidding.
South Dakota bighorn, that's a massive thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I haven't even made it over there to check it out yet.
Yeah.
Been kind of tethered to the booth here and haven't wandered as much as I need to. Yeah.
I mean, in one place to have this kind of quality and quantity in one place for a guy to see all that is impossible anywhere else in your lifetime.
Right.
So just from that.
Yep. And that's every 2 years that, you know, those kinds of, you know, these animals are here. Of course, different species, different animals and what have you, but you get to see typically the bigger animals are taken in that last 2 year recording period.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know where the next one, now that there was another, that was an announcement made, this weekend that they're going to start doing it annually. So they'll still do every 2 years they have a recording period every 2 years. So it's not every year, but every 2 years they have a recording period. So there's a cutoff for this last one is December 31st of this last year. And, so any animals entered in that 2 year period are then recognized during that period. So that's when you get the new world record in that 2 year period. And then those animals are represented here. And then, so the next 2 year period will be in 2021, but now they're starting to do the odd years, or actually technically, I guess it'd be the even years.
Yeah.
Yep. So, and they're going to start, doing an annual meeting between the biannuals.
Correct.
If I understand that correctly. Yeah. And were they going to announce that location tonight? Was that the deal?
Well, the even year, now that they've brought that to our attention, is somewhere right next to Washington, D.C., there in Virginia, a little bird.
Okay.
And it'll be like basically a gathering, no heads, no display, but just another opportunity for all to get together and mingle.
Uh-huh.
But they haven't released the next site for the gathering. They will this evening.
Okay.
Kind of
all right. So
last
some anticipation there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So last night there was Trump Jr. spoke, and then there was some House cleaning, if you will, some some of the chores that they take care of, and some recognitions and stuff, mm-hmm. and some live auction items and auctioning off hunts. And then there's going to be more of the same this evening. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. On a little bit more bigger scale.
Okay. All right.
Should be quite the evening.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it's pretty neat. I missed the last one that was in St. Louis 2 years ago. I was right in the middle of remodeling my place and moving out from California, yeah. and I had signed up for it. And then by the time it came, my shop wasn't up. I didn't have a stock bow inventory or anything. So I just had to bow out on that one. But the 2 years prior to that, was in Phoenix. Yeah. And, so to see the growth, from Phoenix to here. So all they had a vendor area there in Phoenix, and it was contained within one room. And now, I would say it at least doubled in participation from vendors since that year in Phoenix that I went 4 years ago. So there's a lot more to look at. Talking with Rick Mowry, who organizes all that, he's been really kind of promoting that, getting more of the industry companies involved and showing up here. And it's really made for a fun show. Kuyu's here, Sitka's here. There's a lot of outfitters. There's HHA is right across the aisle from me. There's Hoyt is here, Cryptech, and there's a lot of companies. I'm actually, surprisingly, the only Boyer that's here. And that was the case in Phoenix as well.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. So we need to get some more Boyers out here.
Yeah. What's going on?
Yep. Cause there are a lot of traditional bow hunters here, in the Pope and Young Club, and it would be fun to see some more Boyers out here. But there's also a lot of museum stuff that the Pope and Young Club has brought over. That's really fascinating to see, a lot of history that's displayed here, and you know, well worth a visit. You know, and again, we'll know tonight, you know, where the next one will be in 2021. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm already
good
planning,
deal.
Kind of semi
right, not knocking out that 10-day stretch for the unpacking
that's
and
right.
repacking.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the thing. Once you get volunteered, it's hard to unvolunteer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they make sure they use you to your full potential.
Right. Good mm-hmm. deal. All right, Alan, well, I appreciate your time. And, I hope you have a good rest of the show here. And
very good.
Get out there and check out some of the stuff before I got a seminar going in a couple hours, and if they have me back there at Pope and Young again to do a seminar, I think I'm gonna. So my seminar topic this time was mule deer, you know, kind of backpacking for mule deer, and I ran a half hour long on my, without even realizing it, I did a 2 hour seminar, an hour and a half. I didn't even get to the backpacking part,
yeah.
So. Maybe I'll just have to focus on the backpacking end of things rather than the species on the next go around. But
I'm sure they didn't mind.
Yeah, no, it was a good one. Although this time it backs up to lunch, so I might be a little unpopular if I run through lunch there.
Very good.
Good deal. All right, well, thank you a bunch, Alan.
Hey, thanks for having me, Scott.
All right.
See you guys down the trail.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Western Bowhunter podcast, please subscribe and take a few seconds to review the podcast and share it with your friends on your social media platforms. This will help us in the podcast rankings and will help us grow. If you have a topic or a person you'd like to hear from in a future episode, please email south@stalkerstickbows.com with podcast in the subject line. You can further support the podcast by picking up a Western Bowhunter Podcast t-shirt or a window sticker from the Stalker store at stalkerstickbows.com. Thanks for your support.
Too many years have passed me by. I've gone down.